movies and musicals with Aideen Gormley on 96 to 99 RTE Lyric FM.
I have run the gamut, A to Z. Three cheers and damn it, c'est la vie. I got through all of last year and I'm here. Christ knows, at least I was there.
Elaine, thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us here at the Carlisle, where you reside. I saw you here last October. You managed to make every song your own. You own the song, no matter what it is. How do you do that?
Oh, I don't know how you do that. Mm. I don't know how you do it. I'm not keeping any great, deep, dark secret. No, I'm serious. I don't know how you do it. I know that I treat a song like a three-act play. I say three-act because I always remember saying that about Steve Sondheim's song, Here's to the Ladies Who Lunch. I said it was like learning a three-act play. And there was as much thought in that song as a three-act play it was a very good comparison. Mm. He doesn't mess around.
No.
I mean, he just really, you talk about the truth and talk about spilling it out and then to music yet. Quite an accomplishment, mm. Quite an artist, almost, I might even say genius. I don't want to kick that word around, but boy, he's good.
Well, mm. Company is back on Broadway at the moment, but, you know, you were in the original production, and really, as you say, Sondheim, I would agree with you, he is a genius. And I'm just wondering, when you first came across Company and you were asked to be part of it, now we know about Sondheim and you know, back then this was really his breakthrough.
So exciting that I could hardly go home at night and very often didn't. In rehearsal. I couldn't. I finally got a hotel room near the rehearsal hall so that I wouldn't have to go way uptown. I just didn't want anything to interfere with it. I wanted clean sheets and the script. And it was exciting. I knew something was up.
And I think your first read-through was in Boston. I mean, when it did happen and when it was such a success, were you nervous that it mightn't be because it was so new at the time?
I wasn't thinking about whether it would be a success or not. I was just thinking about doing it. I'm sure they were. The producers were thinking about whether it would be a success. But as far as a performer, I didn't even think of that. I only thought of the experience of doing it and pleasing Mr. Sondheim and pleasing Hal Prince.
Let's hear it for the ladies who lunch. Everybody rock.
You've worked, though, with so many great songwriters. Noel Coward is a favorite of yours as well. When did you first meet him?
I met him when he came to see me in Goldilocks in Philadelphia, I think we were. And he liked me in it. He liked what he saw. And he put me in Sail Away. A lot of people say he wrote. I think he had written it before, but he tailored it, let's put it that way, for me because he had complete faith in me, which is, my God, what a compliment. You know, I didn't even know who I was talking to. I mean, I was too young to really know about Noel Coward. I sure found out, you know, when I related to him and the songs that he had written, and then knowing him was a treat, you know, a real treat. He was, aside from being an artist, he was such a nice man, really nice man.
I adore your rendition of Why Do the Wrong People Travel.
Yeah.
Isn't it a great song?
It's a great thought. Isn't it a great... Genuinely funny. Genuinely funny. He had... I like the word wit, and I think that applies to Coward. I think he had great wit.
Why do the wrong people travel, 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 when the right people stay back home? What explains this mass mania to leave Pennsylvania and clack around like flocks of geese demanding dry martinis on the Isles of Greece in the smallest street.
Looking back, when we were talking earlier that you love work and you love a challenge, what was the greatest challenge within your working career?
I was about to say that every day is one, and I really mean that. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be sad about it, but I think I once heard Jerry Lewis say something. Oh my God, I've laughed about it for years. I mean, it's in my head, and every time I'm thinking in along these lines, it comes to me. Somebody asked Jerry Lewis in an interview, I mean, it was one of the dumbest questions ever. You know, what is your vision? He's using words like vision to interview Jerry Lewis. Something was wrong, you know?
Yeah.
The guy that was doing the interviewing was so square, you can't believe it. But he said, Mr. Lewis, what is your vision? What is your understanding of life? You know? Unbelievable. He thought he was talking to Proust, you know? And all of a sudden, Jerry Lewis says, well, if I get up in the morning, I'm a hit.
Okay.
And I have never forgotten it. It is the best explanation and the healthiest. Look how healthy that is. And I know sometimes, and I'm sure that everybody who's honest, who's listening to me, will admit that this is true of themselves. We're all scared to death, I think everybody is. Mm-hmm. And I think you open your eyes in the morning and you go, oh my God, you know. Mm-hmm. And your attitude is the most important thing, and you got to get up and get out and do it.
Yeah.
You got to dust yourself off and start all over again. You got to, every single day is a huge challenge. So you ask me what a challenge is. Singing a Steve Sondheim song or a Noel Coward song or is just one of the trappings.
Okay.
But every day is such a huge challenge. And if you give it that importance, you never think there's a day that you have nothing to do, because you always have something to do if you're going to face the day the way you should. It's kind of, I don't know, even sometimes sadness is exciting. Mm. Funny, sounds like an oxymoron, but I really believe that. You know, maybe it's the actress in me, I don't know. But I like to make the most of it. If things are going well and things aren't going well, I like to give them equal emphasis, you know?
I want to talk a little bit more about your style of singing, because I think it was Frank Sinatra complimented you that you were as good as phrasing songs as he was.
Well, he said that. He'd had a couple of drinks, but I didn't care. I'm grateful for small favors.
And you had a blind date with him, hadn't you?
Yes, I did. I had one blind and one I could see clearly. But Frank Sinatra had a lot of dames in his life. And when they weren't legitimate, they were illegitimate. And I don't think he knew the difference. I think that was his problem. But I pride myself in being terrified. I would never find myself alone with Frank Sinatra, because you get the man mixed up with I've got the world on a string. You get the man mixed up with I'll do it my way. You get the man mixed up from talent, and he gets all screwed up in my mind. Mm. And I would never want to join the club of Frank Sinatra's women.
Yeah,
and speaking, I'd rather be someone he wanted to talk to downstairs, not upstairs.
And would you say the same then of Marlon Brando, another man who had a lot of dames in his life?
Well, the reason I didn't do what Marlon wanted to do it, because I was 17.
And we should point out you were in school, in theater school together then, training.
Yes, and he knew a lot more about SEX than I did. And I'm not to get any credit for not succumbing to Brando's charms. I didn't know what to do if I did succumb. I didn't know the difference from the forest for the trees, blah, blah, blah. I didn't know what to do. I was scared to death. And I was a good kisser, but I didn't know anything about anything beyond that, because it just, it didn't belong in that time of life. Mm. You know, I was in rehearsal for Twelfth Night. I didn't know about going to bed with fellas. I was, you know...
And I mean, apart from even the fellas end of things, was it very scary for you as well, coming from, you know, the conference school upbringing, next thing studying in New York, and next thing on a stage in Broadway?
Sure, sure. But it was all right. That, I took that in my stride. That didn't bother me. It was somebody that tried to get into a part of your life that they didn't belong in at that time, you know? I was fine when I grew up, and it was kind of late in life, but I finally fell in love the right way, and the thing that made me feel comfortable with being intimate. It all happened in its own time.
I've been to a marvelous party with Nuna and Nana and Nell. It was in the fresh air, and we went as we were, and we stayed as we were, which was hell. Poor Lulu got fried on Chianti and talked about esprit de corps. I knew the excitement was bound to begin when Laura got blind on Dubonnet and gin and scratched her veneer with a Cartier pin. I couldn't have liked it more.
What about the Broadway scene in the 50s? I mean, we're on Broadway now in 2007, and it seems that such, you know, so much creativity is always going on here. But what do you think of Broadway now,
well,
and Broadway,
you know,
then?
I'm an alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic, so I don't drink. But I am an alcoholic, and that never changes. There's a wonderful line about alcoholics, and it reminded me of it when you said Broadway in 1950 and 2007. Mm. 2007. Two things that alcoholics hate. One is change, and the other is the way things are. And I love that. I think it's just wonderful, because it's so true. It's so true. And as far as Broadway's changed, but basically it hasn't. You go into a theater and the lights go down and the curtain goes up on a straight play, and it's so, you can hear a pin drop, as the saying goes, or an overture starts in the pit, and boy, that same feeling comes over you. I mean, you expectancy and mystery and drama and that business about, I don't care who you're with, you've got horse blinders on when you're in the theater. You're just all alone with what's going on the stage. And I don't think that'll ever change. It never changes for me. The material is sometimes much better in many ways, and very more than often not as good. The musicals aren't as good as they used to be. Or maybe they just appealed to me differently that many years ago. I don't know. But things change, and you've got to change. You have your memories and you have your thoughts about. But I think it's much too opinionated and critical to go into things about, oh, in my day. You know, my day is today.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, I'm willing to. I'm leaving myself wide open for it.
Yeah.
I love going to the theater. I won't pay for it, but I love going
for
to
you.
It. So very often I go on Broadway to the company manager and say, can I sit in the back? And they're very nice about it. I refuse to pay for a seat in the theater when I've been in it for as long as I have.
Good for you.
My mother and father were having cocktails one night with my two older sisters, Georgine and Sally. And I was almost 14, so my dad shook up what must have been a mean whiskey sour. And he gave me half. I drank it. A star was born.
You talk very candidly in At Liberty about the booze and the drink, and you talk about having, you know, you had to, you didn't go on stage without having a drink. You'd one at the beginning and one at the interval. Tell me about that changing, and tell me about the first time you went on stage
without
a drink.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying. When you've been having that little booster, any pill taker, any alcoholic today, any substance user will tell you, how did you do it? How did you do it? You know? Mm-hmm. I couldn't. I used a drink for everything. I mean, the phone rang, I drank.
You know, they knock on a door, I drank. Mm. And so all drinkers know about that and identify with it. So as as Michael Feinstein, you know who Michael Feinstein is. He's really not only a brilliant performer, but he has this Feinstein at the Regency, the cabaret.
Yeah.
Hotel, and he's a wonderful recording artist and a voice, a velvet voice. He's adorable. He's the guy that grew up with Gershwin and did all that stuff. But Michael put it very well when he squeezed my hand in the wings of the Hollywood Bowl, which is the first time I ever went on a stage without a drink. And he said, and you have to listen to this very carefully, Elaine, you'll stop shows again, not tonight. Tonight, just do it. And I walked out on the stage after that brilliant piece of advice, and I sang Broadway Baby just by rote. I was like a robot, but I got through it in a great big Broadway show. And there was a very polite applause, very polite, nice, rich applause, but not like usual.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't stand up and go, bravo! So I had to work my way around that, and it took time, and I was glad that it took time. I didn't know why isn't it just the same? Because that relaxed, powerful thing that brandy or that scotch gave me was missing. Mm-hmm. But this, you gotta wait, and you gotta see it through. It's like going to a rehab.
Mm.
It's like rehab takes time. You don't go in, take a pill, and come out, and you're fine. Or go in and not take a pill and come out, and you're fine. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. So it took me about 8 to 10 to 12 months to really find out where I perform from. Where is that? It has nothing to do with the booze.
Mm.
It has to do with where you're coming from. But I had to relearn that. And I remember when it started to come back, when I started to perform and I started to feel more relaxed out there, then I hit a level of reality that I didn't even know was there. And then the theater exploded.
Someday, maybe, if I stick it long enough, I may get to strut my stuff, working for a nice man, like a Ziegfeld or a Weissman in a great big Broadway
You mentioned briefly in At Liberty, as a drinking buddy, Judy Garland. What was Judy Garland like?
Pretty much the same as what you're hearing out of me.
Mm.
Yeah, more's the pity, not what you're hearing out of me. You see, I don't think, Judy Garland was born a little too early to be in this, where there were programs that, there was awareness of the dangers of alcoholism, of what it really is. Alcoholism is a not very attractive disease. And it's not only not drinking. You know, they say in things like in AA that putting down the drink is just a symptom of the disease. Mm-hmm. The disease affects you in many, many, many ways, you know. And it's, they refer to people as Her Highness the Doormat. What you think about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You have no self-esteem. And those are all problems that Judy Garland had with this disease that she had.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody told her what to do about it or anybody helped her. I don't think today, if you're having a problem, you call somebody and you say, what can I do? Or they call you and say,
come to a meeting with me, or if you're in a program or whatever, 12-step program. They work.
Because you seem to have had great friends and great supporters around you.
Yes,
and even
I
working
have.
With Sondheim and Hal Prince, they were keeping an eye on you.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. I'm not sure that was out of pure love. I think it was out of the fact they wanted me to sing the song right.
Sure. I think they cared about you too, then.
Yeah, well, I hope so. But we have to live with that. I mean, it's another problem of that an alcoholic takes more seriously. You know, do they like me or do they like, you know, I finally figured it out. Who cares?
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
As long as you mention my name. I mean, I get very cold-hearted about it and because I'm sick of worrying about it.
Mm. What about recognition for you and what about finally getting the Tony for Elaine Stritch at Liberty? Did that mean a whole lot to you? Because you'd been nominated so many times.
Yeah, I didn't know. Well, say again?
You had been nominated so many times and you finally got it.
I was nominated as much as Walter Matthau was. I wonder if he ever won. I don't know. Yes, I think he did for The Odd Couple.
Yeah.
Anyway. When you wait that long, you change your mind about it after a while. You say, oh, come on.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here? You know, who's on first?
Yeah.
Who's running the, you know, come on, fess up. And I didn't realize what it was when I did Sail Away. I was nominated.
Mm.
I mean, there's some contest going on. Today, it is such a big deal. It's a huge deal. And I finally won, and I got up, and this was what, 6 years ago, I guess. And I wanted to thank John Lahr and John Schreiber and most of all George Wolfe. They all came up on the stage with me and they played me out. Now this was the first Tony for an actress that had been in the theater over 50 years. I don't think they should have done that.
No, they shouldn't.
And it was at Radio City Music Hall, which is the most ridiculous place to hold a theatrical Tonys. You know, this is not the Grammys. This is Little Broadway.
Mm.
But, of course, it goes into more television and more higher rating and more people come to New York, so it's all about money. But this was about my life, a human being's life, that has worked her backside off in this business and finally got some recognition. When I say finally got the theater award of all time. And a very funny thing has happened. I went on tour right after that, and somewhere along the way, I lost my Tony.
I don't know
where the hell it is.
Oh, no.
I know. And it's so funny. I just kind of, it was like I rejected it. I didn't want it. And somebody's got it someplace.
Well, you know
you
have
it. So if
they're
living in Ireland now, they might call me.
Okay.
And I will tell them that they can have the Tony if they want it. But just to call me, it would just satisfy me to know that it landed someplace. Right. I'm sure it's backstage. And I don't know where the hell it is. But it's interesting. And who knows, I may win another one.
You may just do that. You've done the stage shows in ensemble work, one-woman shows, cabaret, TV, film. What's your favorite? Do you like to be on stage alone now, or would you like to be in an ensemble piece again?
Oh, I'd love to be in an ensemble. That's my best thing to do, is to work with other people. And I'll tell you something. I don't care if this sounds egotistical. Who cares? I don't have any ego. I don't consider this egotistical. But when you're good, and I am good, I might be too good for my own good. I might be too, because I have, and I mean this, and a lot of people agree with me. I had other people discover this before I discovered it about myself. It's like the problem that Cassie has in Chorus Line. One singular sensation. You attract attention on a stage. You demand attention on a stage. You command attention on a stage. So it throws it off. So you have to be the most important person. You can't be written as one of a group. Now, I don't think that would get in the way with Albee. I don't, because I'd done Albee.
Yeah.
And his plays are strong enough so that everybody's got, you know. Mm. I've gotten brilliant notices doing those kind of plays. But in a musical, you better have me the big wheel. Because if not, I'll come off as the big wheel.
You know, I think I could get, I think I could stop a show on a crossover.
Yeah.
So that's, and I don't know, that's a gift. Or is it?
And do you need to perform now? Do you absolutely need to?
I'm working on it, not needing it. But it's hard to let go of. Mm. It's hard to let go of. And I think I'll know when the time comes to let go of it. But I'm enjoying doing it now. And the interesting thing about Elaine Stritch at Liberty is it is a section of my life, but it is so chock-a-block full of dynamics and dramatics that you don't have to elongate it. You don't have to say, and then in the next year, this happening. Mm-hmm. It tells you enough about the struggle of an artist in the theater to suffice, to satisfy.
Can we talk a little bit about your good friend John Lahr, who compiled At Liberty with you? He describes it beautifully as you being the pitcher and him being the catcher when mm-hmm. you were putting this thing together.
Yeah.
It must have been amazing. Just fill us in on how it worked and how that came together.
Well, of course, unaccustomed as I am to public speaking department, I didn't know anything about this collaborating with a writer and writing a script. But what I did is tell my story, and I'm a good storyteller. And I wrote it down, and then I handed it to, first of all, I performed it for John. I loved to perform, and I'd tell him the story. He'd get it on the computer. And then John had his insights, sensational insights. I'll tell a great story about my mother and dad, but he came from the outside looking in and commenting on what kind of an artist I was or what kind of a performer. Mm-hmm. And couldn't have done it without him, I always say. We got along pretty good,
yeah.
I think.
You said at the beginning that, you know, telling the truth is what it's all about. But
yes.
was it very hard for you just to get out in front of an audience that first time you performed Elaine Stritch at Liberty?
I only wanted to succeed.
Yeah.
I wasn't the least bit. I don't care what they knew about me. Couldn't care less. As long as what they knew about me would be interesting, vital, and entertaining. If it stopped being entertaining, I was out of there. Because what's the point of doing it? Otherwise, you're just somebody that you're a ladies who lunch. He wants to have lunch and tell you all about her sadness and everything. Who cares? Everybody knows the danger of saying, how are you? You know, because somebody's going to tell you.
And I think audiences love your honesty as well.
Well, I think audiences like honesty from the word go. They you know, they open a candy bar when you're telling a lie.
Tell me finally, who... When you're performing firstly and you're understudying the likes of Ethel Merman in the early years, who were the singers you most admired then, and who would you really like to see if you were to go out to the theatre in Broadway tonight?
Oh, what an interesting, wonderful question. You're a very good interviewer, incidentally.
Thank you.
Who would I like to see tonight? Wow. I'd like to see George C. Scott in anything. I'd like to see Tallulah Bankhead in her few good years, sober years. I'd like to see, well, join the club, Lorette Taylor. As a matter of fact, I saw Lorette Taylor in the Glass Menagerie. We sneaked in the theater, Marlon Brando and me, and saw, because we liked the sound of the play. The Glass Menagerie, we didn't know who the hell wrote it or what it was all about. We were just kids in New York. And I went backstage, Marlon didn't, but I went backstage to see this woman, and I was 17, and there was something about, I didn't know enough about the theater to even, but there was something about her that scared me to death, and it was riveting. I'd like to see her tonight. And then I'd like to go to a matinee tomorrow to see Ethel Merman, so I could get one of her one-liner dopey remarks. And God, she was terrific.
She was.
Oh, my God. What a night that would be on Broadway, the ones I've described, huh?
Well,
oh, and what about Vivian Leigh?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because she's been on the stage.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good lineup. We'll stick with that. Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
Nothing comes from nothing. nothing ever could. So somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done something good. Good night, and thank you all so very much.
Movies and musicals with Aideen Gormley on 96 to 99 RTE Lyric FM.